behind the bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere. Never back off. With everything you need to know about the association, this is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Jonesy, our final show before Christmas as the big man comes next week, Christmas Eve, coming up on Tuesday, and a pretty busy schedule for the Raptors with three games in four nights as they will play on Friday against the Wizards, and then the home road back-to-back on Sunday, Monday against the Mavericks and the Pacers. That brings us into a one-day break for Christmas on Christmas Eve, and then playing for the first time ever at home on Christmas Day. We will find out more about the Christmas Day game and get some thoughts from Norm Powell later on in the show. Unfortunately, Norm hurt on Wednesday night in the game against the Detroit Pistons. But nevertheless, I had a chance to chat with Norm a few days ago and wanted to air that interview for you nonetheless as he talks about his season thus far, but a lot of thoughts on the Christmas Day game for the Raptors overall. Raptors, Jonesy, in the midst of a three-game winning streak right now, and one of the teams that they beat, if we kind of go back to almost a week ago, it was Saturday when they played the Brooklyn Nets, and I had a chance to go one-on-one with the longtime radio voice of the Brooklyn Nets, and he is a broadcaster not only in the NBA, but in the National Football League as well, does some college football and basketball as well, veteran broadcaster Chris Carino.
Chris, I want to pick up on something that Kenny Atkinson was asked about when Brooklyn was in town earlier last week on the weekend. The comparisons right now between the Nets and the Raptors in terms of battling through key injuries and trying to kind of not just stay afloat but remain pretty damn competitive in the East overall. I'll look at it from the Brooklyn perspective maybe more so right now. How has this team been able to kind of survive and still be pretty solid without, you know, Kyrie for a bunch of games, without LeVert, and just kind of still plugging away?
What they've done is they did what they did last year when they didn't have the stars.
Right.
And if you look back on last year's team prior to Kyrie Irving, prior to all these other, you know, Kevin Durant coming in, where you were kind of waiting for these guys. Remember, Caris LeVert, the start of the year, emerged as their best player, and he goes down with an injury, and they go on a really bad losing streak. But they were always close during the losing streak. And then how they worked their way out was a lot of role players who knew their niche. They played together with ball movement, played with the pass, and they really dug in defensively. They used some different types of defenses, some zone defenses, things like that, and they figured it out. And they became a team that you didn't want to face. They became one of those teams, and they came into your building at night, you knew you were in for a battle because they were never going to let you relax defensively. You were going to have to be constantly moving to guard their movement offense and helping defensively. So that's kind of what Kyrie Irving went down, and suddenly they had to find that similar identity they had last year. And it's a credit to Kenny Atkinson and his coaching staff. They said, hey, we're in the same position we were in a year ago. We got to dig out of it the way we did a year ago. And they're playing like the kind of team that got to the playoffs last year.
This might get overused sometimes, and I've been guilty of it this year with the Raptors as well. But I think there is some validity to it. Is it where you get to a point where you're developing a system, a style, a culture, and guys then are then expected to play that way? Because I know I look at that with Toronto. There is a certain way that Toronto plays now. For years, we all use San Antonio as the example. Is there a Brooklyn way now in terms of what you're talking about? That, hey, this worked, and this proved that it worked. So, to your point, yeah, if we're down, we go back to what was working.
And I think that all the great franchises, right, have been like that over the years. And the system may change a little bit here and there. It's not like you're saying, we're running the wing T here, and everybody that comes in has got to run the wing T. No, they'll adjust. They'll change. But I think as long as Kenny Atkinson is here and Sean Marks is here, they're going to pride themselves on being a team that moves the ball, that defends, and plays hard every night. And that's, you know, that was a question I remember asking Kenny Atkinson last year. Are you in a situation now where you have to worry about the kind of guy you bring in? Does he have to fit the role, or does the situation going to depend on, can you absorb a guy who maybe isn't your type of player? because he's a talented player.
Sure.
And he said, what we hope to become as a franchise is that we do things a certain way, and guys will come in and they will adjust to us. They will fit into what we do. Now, that being said, when you have an opportunity to add, like last year, the Raptors add a Kawhi Leonard. This year, the Nets add Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, who is out for this year, but he'll come back next year. Can you maintain that culture with those star players? Now, I think all star players are different, and I think sometimes you have to acquiesce to star players because they may be a little quirky or do things a different way, but they have such talent and they've proven that they can help you win so much you have to adjust to it. There's a lot of questions. That's why it's hard to establish those kinds of cultures. But I think when you look what Nick Nurse has done in Toronto, you guys lose Kawhi Leonard, but you established enough of a culture and an identity that you don't fall apart without him this year. Are you the same team? Are you as good? No, maybe not, but we'll find another guy to fill that role. And I think the Nets are trying to do that right now. And I think that's sometimes where, you know, you think of a team like the Miami Heat. Their system has changed over the years. Their star players have changed over the years. But what's the constant? Well, Pat Riley is there, and they do things sort of the Riley way. Eric Spoelstra, he is the disciple of Pat Riley. They have a way. I remember Eric Spoelstra saying something one time last year, one of his press conferences, about a particular player. And he said, well, that didn't work out. He says, well, we're not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think they have established themselves there, and they say, we'll get guys that fit our culture. And when guys come in, and maybe if they're a little bit of a different type of guy, they'll have to adjust to us, or they won't be here. So I think the great teams establish that kind of a culture. That's, I think, what you've got to shoot for as an organization. And I think that it is very similar between the Nets and the Raptors, I think, of trying to establish that.
It's funny, just as an aside, you bring up Miami as the example. I remember earlier this year, I believe it was in training camp, when guys first started reporting, and Spoelstra was on record saying how great James Johnson looked and that he's in shape and he looks solid and he looks ready to go. And then the next day, James Johnson was sent home and told, don't come back until you're actually in shape. Because they ran the tests and they put him on a scale and realized, no, to the eye he might have looked good, but no, you're not in Miami Heat shape and not the way we want you. Go home.
Yeah, and when you think about, you know, Pat Riley was always great at, even when he was back in the days with the Knicks, adjusting his style. Remember, he was a coach with the Lakers. It was a fast pace, up-tempo with stars. When he went to the Knicks, he didn't have those stars. He developed young talent. He developed players like John Starks and Anthony Mason. And then when he went to Miami, it's kind of a hybrid of the two. He was able to get stars but develop players that nobody really thought much of. But the standard that he sets is the culture. And Pat Riley's standard in L.A. was the same as it was with the Knicks, was the same as it is in Miami. The players and the style have changed, but the standard of the culture is the same. And I think that's what you try and strive for in an organization.
Let me ask you this. Big picture, lots of flaws in my theory or in my question, I'm sure. But you're a New York guy, so I'm asking you. Brooklyn gets a team. And you know, moving from New Jersey, and people like, it's never going to be the Knicks. People aren't going to accept Brooklyn. And all of a sudden, Kevin Durant, Paul Pierce, and Darren Williams. And now here we are years later. And you got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And Brooklyn has clearly been the better franchise, better organization in terms of the two New York teams. Why has it worked so well? And why do you think that it's been still such a struggle for the Knicks to even replicate what the Nets are doing, let alone what so many other clubs are doing?
Sometimes I think you're a victim of your expectation level, right? So the Knicks have such a strong following, and ownership has so much money, and Madison Square Garden is such a draw. I mean, think of how bad the Knicks have been, and yet they still fill that building, right? So I think sometimes it can bait you into taking shortcuts and not building the right way. I don't know. I can't speak for them. I'm not in and around it as closely.
Sure.
I mean, I follow it in the media the way everybody is, and I'm in the New York area, so I hear it talked about a lot. But I don't know the inner workings there. All I know is what the Nets have been able to do is they went out, they tried to find some of those shortcuts early on. And a credit to when Mikhail Prokhorov was the owner, was he admits that it was a mistake to take the kind of shortcut they did when they went out and got Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, and it never really worked out the way they wanted it to.
Right.
There was a lesson there to be learned, and he learned it, and he went out this time and he hired Sean Marks and said, all right, I'm going to find a really smart guy that people think highly of from an organization that we respect, like the San Antonio Spurs, and I'm going to hand over the keys to Sean Marks. What do you need? I'm going to listen to you. I don't know in the Knicks side who they listen to. They have gone out and done that, you thought, in the past when they hired Donnie Walsh.
Right.
He was probably the most respected executive in the league. They hired him, and I don't know, maybe they didn't let him do his job the way he's supposed to do it. So I think the Nets were smart enough to do that. And I think it goes back, too, to ownership and management over the time where they addressed all the issues that would be that would come up in free agency. You move to Brooklyn, we have state-of-the-art facility, then they build a practice facility in Brooklyn. They make it attractive for these guys to come play. And then I think that all sort of paid off this year when they got maybe two of the top three free agent guys and they were able to attract Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant to say, hey, we want to come to New York, but we're not going to play for the Knicks. We're going to play for the Nets because they seem to be doing things the right way. They have everything in place the way we want it to do. So it's a testament to ownership, management, general manager, coaches, that it's all sort of done the right way. And I always look at the popularity between the Knicks and the Nets. I mean, some people, there's this riff, and Net fans want to see them become as popular as the Knicks. And I say, you know, it's not, it's really not that. The Nets are sort of the off-brand in New York. And I don't know, Smitty, you look like a guy to me that's not a big, you know, you don't just follow the biggest act. Like, you know, you're not a Taylor Swift fan. I don't know what your favorite band may be, but it's probably some hip, cool alternative band that has a huge following, but it's maybe not
as mainstream,
sell out that, you know, football stadiums, right? But they're okay with their following, and the people who follow them are really, really avid fans. And I think that's kind of the way the Knicks and the Nets are in New York. The Knicks are the pop star that's going to sell out the building and sell millions and millions of records and be popular on social media. The Net fans are the ones that have maybe a smaller group, but they know how good they are, and their fans are really loyal, and there's room for both.
I like that comparison, not just because you called me cool and hip and everything else. I like that analogy. Let me ask you then, in closing, they have the chance then to certainly be the pop star, the rock star, selling out the football stadiums when, with due respect to Kyrie, not that he's not a star in his own right and can't, you know, sell out buildings on his own, but suddenly Kevin Durant comes in next year. How much as an organization, let alone as a fan base, are folks licking their chops saying, hey, we're already pretty damn good. Hell, we're good even without Kyrie in the lineup right now. Kyrie comes back, we're even better. Looking ahead to next year, man, forget about Boston and Philadelphia and Toronto and Milwaukee and whatever else in Miami. We have every reason to think that we should be the top seed, or let alone at least the top 2-3 seeds, and we're going to be right there when KD's healthy next season.
No, absolutely. I think it's funny because your fans, and you know, I follow what fans are saying on social media, just like, you know, you follow it, see what the Raptor fans are thinking. You want to stay close, and you know, and Net fans had very high expectations coming into this year, even without Kevin Durant. And I thought maybe they were a little, you got to pump the brakes on it a little bit. And they'll start saying, well, there's a big hole at the four. You know, you got Torian Prince playing the four. You got to go out and make a deal for Aaron Gordon. Or, like, wait a second. Get through this year. You have the best four in the world coming in next year. So there isn't a big hole. It's just a hole for now. And, you know, let's establish a way of playing. Think of who you can surround Kevin with. And then next year is really when it'll kick in. Now, you don't want that attitude to permeate the team now, because you want to make sure that they're still striving to be a high-level playoff team, which I think they can be an upper, you know, I think they could be in the top six in the East. And then you add Durant, and man, what a push that's going to be. And as far as, you know, the fan base and the way they look at it, I look at it as, you know, think of how many Warrior fans there are around the country right now. The Steph Curry jerseys, when you go in, you go to Florida and you see kids with Steph Curry jerseys. The Nets brand, you know, the Brooklyn merchandise was really hot when it first came out. Brooklyn itself is a brand. Then if you could add them to be a winning team, a championship team, they could become a team that is maybe because when I look at the Knicks, going back to the last thing we talked about, you have generations of people in the New York area that grew up Knicks fans, and they're not just gonna, and they're New Yorkers, they don't just change their allegiance because their team's not winning. They stay with them. But the Nets can end up becoming more popular around the country than they are in their city. But then you also have a young generation of fans who are not necessarily going to just follow what their father does, and their parents are fans of. And those are the ones whose hearts and minds you might be winning over right now. So
I'll tell you, Chris, I'll jump in there. A great example might be Toronto. Mm-hmm. You know, you got dads that grew up as Celtic fans, Laker fans, Knicks fans, Sixer fans, mm-hmm. because there was no team. Yeah. Now you're 25 years in, and you've got young kids that are 25 years old now. They were just being born when the Raptors came into existence, let alone the 35-year-old, the 40-year-old, the 50-year-old that's now a season seat holder that was 10, 15 years old, and now they've seen a championship, which has further solidified their fandom.
Yeah, and think of the Carter effect.
Yeah.
And think of how many kids grew up emulating Vince Carter when you shoveled the snow in the driveway and you had a chance to play outdoors here. But, you know, like, that had an effect on generations of kids. Look at all the great young Canadian players there are now that probably started playing because they saw Vince Carter. Yeah. So I think when you add a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving into Brooklyn, you could have a similar effect, you know, down the road. And Brooklyn's a hip place, so much like you. And, you know, I think there right now it'd be, if you're trying to buy, you're it's like Brooklyn real estate right now. You know, the time to get in on it was 10 years ago. Yeah. You know, now it's a little expensive, you know, and I think, but unlike with the Nets, you don't have to pay anything to jump on the bandwagon, maybe just a few bucks for the tickets.
That is my conversation one-on-one with the Brooklyn Nets radio play-by-play voice, Chris Carino. Jonesy, what are your thoughts on Brooklyn? I mean, they're kind of hovering right around that 500 mark, a couple of games up, a couple of games below in terms of where they've been this season. They're right in the thick of the playoff picture in terms of the 6-7-8 seed. I think that they're good enough to hold teams off even without Kyrie Irving, but once Kyrie's healthy, that certainly makes them that much more dangerous. And then, of course, when you look ahead to next year and beyond, as I did in that conversation with Chris, this could be a very dangerous team, and a team that, as again I addressed with Carino in that interview, a team that could very well be knocking on the door of the top one or two in the conference for potentially many years to come.
Well, look, here's the thing. Kyrie Irving was brought in to be one of the big two in terms of their duo with Kevin Durant, and it's not going to materialize this year. The Nets made their name by playing a certain style of basketball. They played together. Kenny Atkinson created that culture where they shared the ball, they moved people, they moved the ball, and they really played together, and they became known around the NBA as a hard-playing, hard-working team. Not that they're not that this year, but with Kyrie Irving in the lineup at the start of the season, they went 4-7, and they looked anything like the group that Kenny Atkinson created. Kyrie Irving dominated the ball. You know, Eric, he's a ball-dominant guy, gets his hands on the ball, and he's not always willing to give it up. That's always been the way he's played. He played like that in Cleveland. He played like that in Boston. He created issues in Boston, and he moved on. He's brought that to Brooklyn, and I'm sure the Nets knew what they were getting with him. So, hence, they ended up 4-7 with him in the lineup, and they have been much better without him in the lineup. And, you know, guys have said this, experts have said this. I hope Kyrie Irving is watching what this team is doing when he's not in the lineup. And what they are alluding to is the fact that they are sharing the ball. They are moving the ball. When they play high screen and roll with Spencer Dinwiddie, he's making good decisions. He's shooting the ball coming off the screen. He's moving the ball. Other guys are getting involved. So that's on Kenny Atkinson now to make sure that Kyrie Irving understands what they're trying to accomplish when he comes back into the lineup. As for next year, I think they're going to go back, and my fear is they're going to go back to that isolation ball. They're getting Kevin Durant back. They've already got Kyrie Irving. Both guys like to have the ball in their hands, particularly if they have teammates that they, quote, don't trust, unquote. And I can see it very much being a your turn, my turn kind of thing, where Kyrie takes the ball, puts his head down and does his thing, and then Kevin Durant does the same thing when he gets the ball. So I like what the Nets are doing. I like the moves that they've made, that they got the two stars. They seem to get along well. They agreed to go there together, but it's a matter of meshing those two stars when they get it all together and they're both healthy. And that won't be till next year.
All right, Jonesy, we'll shift our attention away from Brooklyn and the Eastern Conference overall and put it right back squarely on the Toronto Raptors as we will chat one-on-one with Norm Powell when we continue on Hoops, our pre-Christmas edition, right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you again. Our final show before Christmas next week, but a very busy time for the Raptors with three games in four nights against Washington, Dallas, and then in Indiana on Monday night. Norm Powell on Wednesday night. He struggled a little bit to start the ballgame against the Pistons, but was kind of starting to get things rolling again, and he's been one of the hottest Raptors for the better part of the last two, 3 weeks. Going into Wednesday's game against Detroit was, you know, putting up career numbers. He's had a career year this season, Jonesy, in terms of his scoring, field goal percentage, assists, rebounds, everything. I mean, across the board, three-point shooting, he's been unbelievable. Norm is having a fantastic season, and we're, you know, everybody kind of keeping the fingers crossed that the injury that he sustained on Wednesday is something that doesn't derail things for him for too long, I suppose. But nevertheless, a few days ago, I had a chance to chat with Norm about his year, the Raptors' year, the championship last year, trying to move on in the shadow, in a sense, of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, looking ahead to the Christmas Day game, his thoughts on Christmas and the history of that game and what it meant to him as a kid as well, just as a viewer, as a basketball fan. A lot of different topics as I had a chance to go one-on-one with Norm Powell.
Norm, the way you're playing right now, this season specifically, career numbers across the board, can you explain why that's happening beyond just maybe the additional minutes and the starts and whatnot? I mean, is everything kind of coming together for you this season?
I think a little bit of both. Just being more comfortable out there, the experiences that I've had in the past seasons, and I think the championship run, just the confidence you know, that I have in myself, and just the continued work that I put in my game and always trying to get better and seeing the areas that I can improve in. But I think the opportunity just to be out there, you know, and play through mistakes, play through missed shots and breakdowns here and there, just helps you, you know, to continue to have a mindset on the next play and how you can help the team get better and win.
Is that just maturity, kind of getting older and growing in the game and growing within yourself and your role with the team?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the more time you're out there, you know, the more years you have, the more games you have under your belt, the more comfortable you are out there, you know, with the different situations and things that go on, you know, teams going on runs, how you handle that, the momentum switch, changes in the game, you know, just your mindset and how you go about handling those things and how you can come together and stay within yourself and continue to go at the game in the right direction and right mindset with the team.
When you talk about that mindset and handling things, how do you wrap your mind around, I've got to be the same way, approach the same way, whether I'm starting, whether I'm coming off the bench, whether I'm playing 10 minutes, whether I'm playing 30 minutes, and having that same attitude?
Just staying in the present moment. Just really staying focused in what's needed right now. You know, not getting outside myself and wondering about what happened in the past, what happens, what's going to happen in the future. You know, just really staying within what that moment needs at that point in time and not deviating from that. You know, I just really focus on the now. You know, it doesn't matter what happened a play ago, a shot ago, or what's going to happen or where the game's going. Just continue to stay right here in the present moment and just go at it that way. That's honestly the thing for me.
Is that where the whole UTG and understand the grind kind of stemmed from? I mean, is that where it kind of grew from, this just kind of plugging away and keeping at it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was something that, something that we came up with when I was in high school with my boys growing up as a motivational tool for us to continue to achieve our goals and grow after our dreams. And it just developed into a lifestyle, you know, to continue plugging away, continue finding a way to achieve what you want, even if there's obstacles in front of you, you know, and trying to learn and figure out how to get there. You know, it doesn't matter where you're at now. All that matters is the work that you're putting in and your mindset towards your goals. You can be faced with any type of adversity, but it's all about how you face and go at that and attack that obstacle that's going to really determine how successful you are.
It's kind of ironic. You come up with something in high school that really does sort of stay with you then through college and then into the pros. I mean, as a second round pick and as it coming north of the border, and then the disrespect, you know, alleged or otherwise, that seems to kind of be planted on Toronto sometimes. But then you go from a bench guy to a starter, you go from a non-playoff team to a playoff team to a championship team, how it all kind of ties in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's what's the best thing about this is that it fits anybody and everybody, you know. A lot of people think that understanding the grind is just about being an athlete and, you know, the daily grind of trying to get better, trying to figure it out and just continue to work and stay in the gym and things like that. But everybody has a grind. Everybody has somewhere, some place they want to be or vision themselves of being successful. And it's about the work you put in. You know, I think it's been really fitting for me, especially just the way my career has been. You know, it's all about that grind. There's always been obstacles in front of me, things that I've had to do to be successful and get to this point in time and be an NBA champion and just being here in Toronto with this amazing organization. You know, we've always been grinding and chipping away at it and trying to figure it out and trying to build and trying to come together. And it all just ties into the motto, you know, hard work, dedication, commitment, and just staying committed to those things and having the right attitude and mindset to continue going forward no matter what's thrown your way.
One of those guys that I would think it applies to as well then, and you know him quite well, he's one of your guys, Pascal. I mean, you see the way that he's risen, grinded from a guy who's been playing basketball less than a decade, and here he is now as maybe the cornerstone guy, potential all-star, MVP candidate. How proud are you as a teammate, let alone as a friend, and from where you guys have come together to see what he's doing?
Man, I love Pascal. I'm so happy for him and his development and his commitment to getting better every year. You know, his commitment to working on the weaknesses that he had, you know, when he first came in as a rookie, his shooting, you know, and his ball handling, the way he's able to bring the ball up the floor and create for others and take guys off the dribble and pull up and space the floor with his catch and shoot shots. Man, it's just been amazing to see him grow, you know, and honestly, I always tell him this. I remember when he came in and he was starting for a little bit when Jared Sellinger was out, and he was upset when Silly got back and right. I started him, and I just told him, man, like, your time is coming, you know, just continue to stay at it, continue to work, continue to grind, and, you know, things are going to happen eventually, you know, the opportunity is going to come. It's such a long season, you know, just to stay positive and stay confident in yourself, and it's going to turn around, because he was really upset. It was just in the locker room. It was really weird, because it was just me and him, you know. It was, I walked in and I could see him so mad in his locker, and, you know, I talked to him. I always bring it up to him, and to see where he's at now, man, it's just been a blessing for him, and I know how hard he's worked and how committed he is to this team and getting better and wanting to win. So I'm really proud of everything that he's accomplished so far and going to.
To that point, how much do you guys talk now about this little extra swagger that you have and probably should have after winning a championship, walking around with your chest puffed out a little more? You are NBA champions and you always have that. And there is a different aura, it seems, around a team when they come into an opposing team's arena or when you're in your own home floor. It's like, hey, we are the reigning champs.
I think we talk about it a little bit. You know, we try not to get too bogged down by being an NBA championship and knowing, you know, what comes with that. You know, our main focus is what we have to do this season to get back, you know, and attacking it that way. I think it's been a lot of fun for us, you know, to be the defending champions and know that no matter what team it is, no matter where they're at in the standings, they're going to give us their best shot night in and night out, and we have to come prepared. We have to come ready to play. You know, I think that's what makes it so fun being a championship, because you got to bring your A game every single game, and it's going to be competitive, you know, and it's what we work for. So I think that's more how we look at it, you know, and, you know, we have that confidence that you guys come here, you're going to get our best shot. We're going to play hard. We're going to play tough. We're going to play together. We're going to play unselfish, and we're going to bring it to you.
Has it been hard to integrate some of the new guys, or do you look at it and say, no, they know what's expected of them when they come here? And I mean, I know Chris was here last year, but I think of, you know, Terrence Davis, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Chris Boucher, the way that they're playing. Maybe not quite the mob squad that we had a couple of seasons ago, but the bench guys and some of the new faces have really added to what you guys are trying to do.
Yeah, I think training camp, you know, they start to understand what we're about, what this team's about, how we like to play, how we are together on and off the floor, you know, and what you have to do on a nightly basis. You know, it's not one night, not here or there, you know, consistently bringing energy, playing hard, and, like, the offense is going to take care of itself. You know, some nights you're going to make shots, some nights you're going to miss shots, but the energy and effort, it always has to be on the defensive end, and I think those new guys have really, you know, just slowly starting to figure it out, especially when Kyle and Serge was out. You know, they got more minutes, they got more of a chance to to understand the rotations and the flow of the game and our foundational components of our defense. Could be like the chains defense. We just like to switch it up here and there. And those guys really bought in, and you can really see that the energy and effort that they needed to bring, and they've started to consistently do that over that stretch of games. And now that everybody's starting to be back, they're getting spot minutes, but they're still bringing that same consistent energy night in and night out.
Are you looking forward to that game, not just because of Christmas Day and the spotlight being on you, but it's a heck of a matchup too, and I mean, one of your rivals in playing the Celtics?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, especially against the Celtics, because the game earlier in the season at Boston, you know, it was tightly contested, and I feel like we let one slip away in our hands. So, you know, to have another chance to go at them, you know, on the Christmas Day is going to be a lot of fun. You know, they're a playoff team. They're a great team, the way they've been playing this season with the new addition of Kemba. You know, they give them another dynamic player, you know, and the young guys and Tatum and Brown, the way they've come together and been, you know, the heads of the team. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and you know, another great test for us to go out there and get better and build to where we want to be.
You guys have played about a third of the season now. You mentioned Boston, but where do you see where Toronto fits in this mix right now with Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, Miami? You guys kind of all battling it out in those top four or five slots in the East.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great battle throughout the rest of the season. I think we're still going to be a top three team, you know, little skid here and there, but it's early and trying to figure all the things and rotations and kinks out with the guys coming back. But once we get in our rhythm, once everybody is at full health and strength, you know, I think we're going to continue to make a strong push and get back on our winning streaks and continue to move up in the standing.
That was my conversation one-on-one with Norm Powell, and wanted to make note as well, folks, that a edited version, a shortened version of that interview with exclusive content that you didn't hear right here will air on TV on Sportsnet coming up on Monday, likely during the halftime show of the Pacers and Raptors. Again, that will be exclusive content in that interview, stuff that you did not hear moments ago in my chat with Norm. Jonesy, let's look big picture beyond just Powell, but obviously I'm sure your answer will include Norm. You know, three-game winning streak, which you know, came on the heels of the Raptors having lost 4-5, and people were kind of starting to, you know, maybe look out of the corner of their eye a little bit. Okay, was this you know, hot start to the season? Was it a bit of a mirage? Now the Raptors are struggling. Well, suddenly now they've won three straight, and they might not have beaten world beaters, but they're still undefeated against teams below 500. They still have an incredible record overall, still have a fantastic record at home, but they're going to have to, you know, do it in the face of, you know, more injuries piling up. And it's just kind of been an interesting year for Toronto, to say the least, both pro and con, when we look at this season now, essentially at the one-third mark.
Eric, the Raptors have been playing really, really well lately. After losing 4 or 5, they're on a three-game winning streak, and it'll be interesting to see if it continues. Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka seem to be getting back to form. Lowry with a triple-double last night in Detroit, and I thought Ibaka was terrific coming in and taking over from Marc Gasol. And one of the other guys who has helped them immensely over this stretch, unfortunately, will be out for a while now, or it looks like he'll be out for a while now, and that's Norm Powell. Norm has been terrific. I mean, going into last night's game against Detroit, he had a sequence where he'd scored over 20 points and in three straight games and shot 60% or better. And that's only been done three times by two other players in franchise history. So it's going to be tough going on without Norm. But look, the Raptors have shown their depth has been able to get them through. They played well without Kyle and Serge. They did okay without Fred. Nick Nurse is hopeful that Fred will be back Friday, but now they're going to have to go forward without Mark and Serge. And I think the biggest thing is their defense. Mark was an anchor for their defense, so they're going to have other guys step up. Patrick McCaw has been good. Their perimeter defense has been good. It's just that Mark is the anchor back there on the back line. So they're going to have to really, really step forward defensively, collectively. And Serge is good at protecting the rim, but he's not Mark in that sense in terms of his size. So he's very capable, though. So that's not a big deal. And then the offense. You look at the offense, man, they have been playing with great pace recently. I mean, terrific pace, pushing the ball. And if it doesn't count as a fast break point, they've been getting, I guess, what we would call transition points before the other team can get back and get set up. And they've done a good job of that lately. So they need to keep it going. They're getting into a part of the schedule now where, you know, the next three games, you know, a couple of them home games. They've got, you know, tomorrow night, they've got Washington, a team that will get up and down and score the ball. But If their defense is good, they should be able to get that one. I mean, you're never supposed to win, but you look at Washington, the way things are going right now, and think you should win that game at home. And then you've got Dallas coming in without Luka Doncic. They're playing very well. They really gave Milwaukee the other night a run for their money. But let's face it, without Luka Doncic, they're a different team. So you got a couple games there, and then the tough one. You go on the back to back to Indiana on the second night, and the Pacers are a team that nobody's talking about, but they're one of the, I would think, the six teams in the East that are really, really tough. And the East is showing tremendous depth, and it's going to be a difficult game in Indiana. And look, if you're the Raptors, you've already dropped the game to Philly. You're 1-1 with Philly. You're 0-1 with Boston. You got to start getting some of these games for tiebreaker sake going forward.
All right, Jonesy, I've done enough work so far. It's time to put you to work. We're going to take our second break, and when we come back in the last segment of our show, we will look at the Eastern Conference again, take a look at the NBA, but also take a look at a team that was a powerhouse that is clearly in a bit of a rebuild mode now, as we will chat with former NBAer, Cavaliers broadcaster Jim Jones, up next on Toronto Raptors basketball. Actually, no, on Hoops. See, I'm so used to saying Toronto Raptors basketball. Man, Jones, I'm getting ahead of myself here. It's Hoops, and we are the home of Toronto Raptors basketball, right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. All right, I've done enough so far. You heard me one-on-one with Chris Carino to start off the show. We also had the interview with Norm Powell. But Jonesy, I know you were busy this week as well, and you had a chance to go one-on-one with the color analyst, radio broadcaster for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Here's Jonesy, one-on-one with former NBAer Jim Jones.
Jim, always good to see you. Raptors and the Cavs have kind of flipped spots over the last 5-6 years. Toronto always trying to run Cleveland down, and now Cleveland's in that portion. I always say you, winning a championship is like buying a house. You buy the house and you pay the mortgage.
And we're paying for it right now, but there's nothing we can be ashamed of, and we shouldn't be sad. Four straight trips to the finals.
Right.
I mean, that's unheard of in our league, and you guys deserve it. You know, you had the best player in the league last year, and that was Kawhi. You had a great system, and you had a great bench, and a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. But what most people don't talk about is Siakam's development.
Right, right. Jim, and you've seen that from, you know, when there's a star player and other guys are, quote, the helpers. Some of those helpers are pretty good in their own right, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, you know, because it always comes down to players trying to realize their true identity. And Siakam was watching Kawhi, how hard he works, his demeanor on the court based on time and score, how he acted off the floor, all of those intangibles. He was at that point where that was the next step for him,
right.
you know, was to bring those intangibles into play. And I tell you what, he's, in my estimation, one of the top five players in our league, because there's no one that can match up with him. He's 6'10", maybe 6'11". He's as quick as the guards. He can play at a fast pace. He goes inside, outside. He's just a tough matchup every night.
Jim, the thing that you look at is, I mean, everybody looks at the offensive end. Give me your take on Pascal's defense.
Well, I think the length, it's all about length.
Yeah.
It's all about length and enthusiasm. Bobby Knight used to always say you play defense with your legs and your brains. I think that your coach has got them in a great system. They have a strong foundation with Gasol in the middle and tremendous length with Ibaka, Gasol, and Siakam. You know, when you guys, the second half of the season, when teams are a little weary and there's no more surprises, I think that's when you're going to make your move.
With Jim Jones, radio broadcaster and longtime NBA player for the Cavaliers. Jim, let's talk a little bit about the rest of the league. I mean, and people seem to want to look at a guy you know, LeBron in the West, and Kawhi and Paul George and Anthony Davis, those two duos. But I'm looking at the East,
yes.
And all it takes is one team.
That's right.
The East, in my eyes, doesn't get enough respect. There's six good teams in the East when you look at the top, and then you put Indiana in there. And I tell you, if Durant and Kyrie Irving were healthy, Brooklyn have to be in that mix too.
Yeah, and when you look at all the teams, and I know you're a student of the game, so you watch all the games. there's more talent this season, better teams in the East than there is the West. The surprising thing is that no journalist is willing to say that, but it's very true. The West is top heavy. They've got maybe three teams over there, but we over here, we've got six teams right. that can compete. Indiana's no joke, man. And in the second half of the year, I think Orlando's going to be a lot better. And then it's going to be the traditional teams, of course, like the 76ers, the Celtics, and you guys. You know, it's going to take a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot to come out of the East.
A couple of weeks ago, you guys were in Philadelphia, and we were in there the next day on the back-to-back, and they really took it to the Cavs. Give me your impressions in that team, Philadelphia, because a lot of people like them, but at the same time, they're kind of leery of them, with the big guy not being, Embiid not being as consistent, Ben Simmons not really being a jump shooter. Give me your take on them, Jim.
They have weaknesses, as you mentioned. But even the best team have weakness. The best teams have weaknesses. The strength of your strategy and your philosophy should be to minimize your weakness
yes.
and accentuate what you do best. And they're not there yet. They don't seem to have the discipline to consistently do what they do best. Now, what do they do best? I think they can defend.
Yeah.
I don't think they're a bad defensive team. Even with lazy Embiid out there, I still think that they're a good defensive team. And when they get out and run, there aren't too many teams in this game that can outrun them. Now, the other thing is they play so much half court that it exposes what Simmons can't do.
Right.
Simmons is early in the clock, fast break type of player, and you have to put him in those situations so that he doesn't rely on his jump shot. I'm surprised that he's not a better jump shot shooter by now. He had all summer to work on that shot, and it's still not there.
Jim, let's move up the coast a bit to Boston. They seem to, with Kemba Walker in the mix, be somewhat back to that team from a couple years ago where Brad Stevens depended a lot on ball movement, player movement.
Yes.
They played together. I'm seeing this kind of reincarnation of that Celtic-type squad.
Yeah, the only problem I see with Boston, you're exactly right. The only problem I see with Boston is that they don't have any size.
Yeah.
And those top two teams, like you guys and Philly, Indiana, Orlando, they're going to have issues with them.
Yeah.
All you guys are coached by good coaches. They know how to exploit size and pace and make you play half court.
Well, that is the thing, though, right? If you can slow a guy down and get him in the half court.
Right, you can minimize size because you can try to overcome it with your team defense. You know, I just think that you guys are in a good position. You're going to be either, I think you're going to rise as high as second, maybe third. I think you'd be a little disappointed because you have experience and your defense is already set. It's already good. I looked at the numbers. The numbers aren't saying what you're really doing. I mean, you're a plus 6.5 differential, you know, between defensive and offensive points, and that's going to get better. I just think you have the best of both worlds. When you're healthy, I think you guys got a chance to come out of the East.
All right, with Jim Jones, longtime broadcaster for the Cavs and NBA player, Milwaukee. They seem like they're on a mission, Jim. I mean, they went up 2-0 on Toronto. It really should have been 1-1, and then people were surprised that Toronto came roaring back 4 straight. To me, the key was Giannis. When your best player is unable to consistently knock down a mid-range, because, you know, that's what they take away in the playoffs. They run you off the line, which I have a problem with, this bad defense. Oh, we ran him off the line. Well, what you're doing is giving up a mid-range, and they protect the rim. But Giannis seems to he needs to show me more consistency in that mid-range game.
Yeah, but that's his game. I mean, the game he's playing now is real. But just like Parcells said, you know, your record is what you are.
Yes.
His style of play is what he is.
Yeah.
The question is, I think they need help. I don't think.
Where, Jim?
I think they're too slow. Giannis and maybe, I don't think he has enough help. I just think that Middleton is better in open space early in the clock.
As opposed to half court.
Yeah, and he's their second guy as far as their ISO. And I just think that he's not going to be consistent. He wasn't last year.
Right, right.
He struggled in ISO. And I just think that Giannis needs more help. I think he needs more shooters. I think they need one more guy that can score his own points, take that pressure off Giannis. And then, you know, when they build that wall in there, you're not getting through. Philly's good at building a wall. You know Boston will be. Yeah. I just think that Indiana's going to be very formidable for them when the playoffs start. Hey, when Nate Williams, whatever the coach is, can focus on you,
yeah,
it could be very difficult for him. I just think that he's good for what he does regular season, but in the playoffs, man, if he doesn't hit more variety in that mid-range jump shot, and he doesn't have a floater, it's just either at the rim, and he doesn't have a three-pointer. He kicks his head back, pulls his shoulders back when you watch the flight of the ball.
Right, right.
And so that takes away from your shot, especially when fatigue is a factor.
Yeah.
I just think they've got some things to work on, and I think they know it.
Last question, Jim. Who's coming out of the West? If you had to pick Lakers or Clippers, I'll give you my take. And a lot of people like LeBron, and it's hard to bet against that guy with Anthony Davis. They got size.
Yes.
I mean, when you talk about Dwight Howard, and like they got size. I see the potential for the Clippers to be a better defensive team with Kawhi, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, although he's a little undersized on the inside.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you put Doc Rivers in there. I just give the Clippers a nose in front right now.
I think LeBron and his group will take the regular season. But I think if you can focus on Anthony Davis, and they have enough defenders to do that, throw enough people at him. Montrez is a heck of a physical player.
Plays hard,
and,
huh?
That seems to be the problem with Davis. He doesn't like a lot of physical play. He's better early in the clock in transition. You know, when they have numbers or when it's 3-on-2, 2-on-3, 5-on-5, he can still score, but it's usually off of somebody else. You know, I don't know. But I don't bet against LeBron in the regular season. LeBron knows the importance of having home court.
Yes.
Even though he can win, not a home court, but it'd be easier for his teammates because they haven't been there.
Yeah.
I worry about their bench and their depth. I don't know if Kuzma's the answer. They've got a lot of dead weight on that bench that might play well during the regular season, but won't be a factor when you have to cut that roster to 7-8 players.
Jim, you hit the experience factor too, and I think that's key. Great to talk with you, and we look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thank you. I like that suit.
That was Jonesy in conversation with former NBA player, currently Cavaliers analyst, Jim Jones. That's going to wrap up another edition of our show. Thanks to Chris Carino, Norm Powell, and Jim Jones. Thanks to our entire production staff as well. And to all of you listening, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate at this time of the year. Hopefully you're going to have a really good one with friends and family, and all of our best, myself and Jonesy, from our families and friends to your family and friends. All the best for the holiday season. We will speak to you on, in a couple of days, actually, on our next radio broadcast, but on this show specifically, after the holiday season. Keep it tuned on Thursday nights to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.